I'm your Hans the Interpretive Dance Boy.
Which is really great on a podcast medium.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. Nice. But like, this might as well happen.
I'm just gonna let it be.
This Brand Marquez Lemon's podcast. I'm Lemon Martin, your moderator. I use they, them pronouns. And yesterday I walked for 50 minutes to get some vegan smoked cheese.
And you would walk for 50 more.
Yeah, I probably would, to be honest. It's so good. You can only get it in Asda. It's smoked cheese by Applewood Farms, I think. Mm-hmm. And like, as someone who's been giving up dairy and who just misses smoked cheese so much, I was like, I was with my brother who's vegan and was just eating his smoked cheese, and I like put it on the other side of the table and I was like, oh yeah, one slice will be enough, thank you, and then kept reaching over the board, the Catan that we were playing, and everyone was like, Nemo, just eat the cheese.
The fucking cheese.
I was like, no, if it's on the other side of the table, I won't eat it. And they were like, Nemo, just eat the cheese. So yeah, I walked and got 3 blocks of it to gift to my beautiful friends, because this needs to be shared around.
Because in this room, not one dairy is allowed. I'm Grace. I'm not your moderator, but I do also use they, them pronouns. I'm your primary researcher, and I'm your art boy, who's been in art purgatory for the last month and will be in art purgatory for another 2 weeks while I produce art.
Are you still enjoying it?
Yeah. I enjoy it when I finish it and I look at them and I'm like, wow, maybe I'm good at art. And I hate it for every second while I'm doing it when I'm like, who chose me to do this? I am a talentless hack. And then I finish it and I'm like, huh, I can do art. And then I have to start another one. And I'm like,
and the cycle continues.
I'm a talentless hack.
Creating art.
Yes. Yes.
I'm Stevie, your secondary researcher. She, her pronouns. I'm your farm baby. I've been playing a lot of Stardew Valley recently.
You did. I can be like, you traitor, you've gone and got a farm without us.
You've been doing lots of farming activities recently. You whittled.
I whittled wood yesterday. Oh, no, God. I've got to save that for the next one. Oh, okay, take it back. Stardew Valley. Mm. If Nemo, who I'm pointing at, would get Steam and then get Stardew Valley, we could be farming together.
I can buy it now. I can go on Steam right now and buy
it. I have a farm set up that's just waiting for someone to farm with me.
Okay, I've had two friends promise. I'm getting it.
They haven't joined it.
No, okay, I'm getting it.
We already have chickens. I planted too many crops for me to water on my own.
Okay, I'm on Steam. I'm logging in.
You both look and are speaking like the most furious farm wife right now. with your like gentle cloth wrap around your head.
And 3 cardigans on.
3 cardigans and a wholesome dress with a turtleneck underneath.
And now I just need someone to play with me.
She says, looking at Nemo.
Who's buying the game right now? So.
You can now platonically live with a spirit who lives in the sewer, and I love him.
Oh my god. Wow. And I have Stardew Valley. Talking of farms,
we're just going to go away from farms.
Okay.
Not be at a farm for a while. Talking of farms, we're coming back mid cliffhanger. Mm. I feel like I'm living a live action mic testing where we're testing the mic on the air. You're just going to just keep adjusting. Great. We zoom back in to the hospital, where, at that moment, Fantine was in ecstasy.
Wow. I didn't know she was doing lines just that. Do you do lines of ecstasy? I don't
Absolutely
know.
Absolutely not.
Do you boil it?
I think it's a pill.
It's just a pill.
It's a pill, okay, cool.
Were you never in drugs training?
My cousin, like, on coming to the UK, was like, Nemo, and she, like, texted me, and it was the first thing that she said, and she was like, Nemo, where can I get weed? And I was like, I don't know, I'm not cool.
Don't ever do that, yeah.
And she was like, oh, you know, don't worry about it, like, if it's not, like... But in the way that's like, oh, you know, like the legality thing. And I was like, no, I don't care about that. It's just the idea that I know anyone who would sell me weed.
Nice.
Bread and barricade. That's responsible, kids.
Yeah. Okay,
so
cool.
Back to speaking of ecstasy.
Talking of drugs. So Fantine's having a really bad time.
What happened to the ecstasy?
Well, at that moment, which is the moment that Jean Valjean passes into... Arras, or is about to pass into Arras, that is when Fantine is in ecstasy, but up until then, she's been having a really bad time. Mm-hmm. It's like, ooh, she's in ecstasy, but I'm not going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you about all the bad stuff that happened
before.
About
the come down.
Yeah. No, because it happens before. Mm-hmm. It's like leading up to the ecstasy. That's the sort of, that's where, it's the about the night that leads up to the obtaining of illegal substances. She's having a bad time.
I mean, to be fair, she is on laudanum, which is opium.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
She's feeling all kinds of things right now.
She's certainly having experiences. She's not sleeping well. She's got an incessant cough and a fever and is having bad dreams. The doctor comes in the morning and she's delirious. The doctor is very worried and recommends that the mayor... returns immediately. But throughout the morning, Fantine has been has been apathetic, saying very little, crumpling the bedclothes under her hand, while under her breath murmuring figures which seem to be calculations of distance. Which I like. I don't know why she would be calculating distance, but all I can think of is, like, you know, in Merlin, when Merlin's always really ill and, like, dying from some sort of poison and is, like, mentally travelling with Arthur, who's going to, like... like, that's, in my head, what is happening. Fantine is Merlining, and is travelling with Jean Valjean, who's not going to get an antidote. But that's what I feel like is happening.
That's funny.
The fact that that is where my mind went. She's murmuring figures of distance. Even though she is sort of apathetic and lying miserably in bed mood, every now and again her eyes light up. And it would seem that as darkness approaches, a light from heaven shines for those who are about to leave the brightness of earth. The people who wrote the musical staging read that sentence of the book and nothing else.
We're like, oh, light. Yeah, no,
we can do that. We've got light.
Yeah, we can as bright as possible. Yeah,
as bright as possible. Yeah, that's the only sentence of this book that they read.
I'm sure there's the word blue and the word yellow in there. Is yellow coat.
Who wears a yellow coat?
Jean Valjean later. He has this, like,
you said that like everyone was gonna be like, of course.
It's like he's got this yellow coat and it's really funky and it's got loads of patches and that's hanging up that all of our viewers can see.
Yeah.
Is Sarah Jean Valjean.
Sarah Jean Valjean. Yes. Oh my god.
Who does that make you?
I don't know. I'll go shout at her and be Javert.
Yeah, I was like, there it is, we found it. Sarah would hate that.
She'd never see it coming.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yellow coat.
Yeah, yellow coat. And he looks like a beggar when he's in it. Oh. And so everyone's like, who is this random bullshit bastard boy in a yellow coat?
Huh.
And then he gives loads of money and all the beggars are like, but you're wearing a gross yellow coat. And then Javert's like, wait, I know one man who would look like a bastard beggar boy but have loads of money. It must be Jean Valjean.
Is Javert's coat blue?
I think so.
There we go. And then we got the blue lighting that they've
Wow.
Excellent. So the blue and the yellow light are actually...
I can't wait to apply this reading to the, oh, wait a second, we'll never see it again.
Oh. I don't know what the lighting stays look
yeah,
like.
Yeah, we don't
imagine
know.
Imagine
like...
it won't stay exactly the same, though.
No,
but the, it's but not everything actually, else yeah. that we've watched of Les Mis has done it.
But it yeah. was based on that.
Oh. Yeah, I don't think it is anymore because they changed.
Well, we'll see if we have to talk about.
But then, well, my gasp was, maybe they'll have to remake the BBC series again to match this new staging and they'll do
oh,
it.
Oh, what a shame.
Maybe they'll hire Nemo to write it.
No, I've got to wait like 30 years until
yeah,
I can
be
do
a
it.
Time.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you'll be old enough to play Jean Valjean.
Oh my god. It'll be my seminal
together.
Piece.
Nice.
And I will cast you as the fucking...
As Mr. Yeah. Chauvelin! Oh.
We'll get you a Frank. The horse.
By then I will have my own Frank.
Okay.
I will be able to provide Frank.
You have to get
put
the
it
exact
in...
breed specifically so
that... I need his neck to be short, one. That stomach to be... Tubby.
Yeah, he's got to have a belly.
Got to be stringy.
I don't want an ugly horse.
Big head.
Wow, that's so rude, Grace.
You turned on Frank so fast.
Yeah. And here we were, setting you up, having a whole horse
I've waited
episode.
For so long. I want my dream horse.
God, I can't believe this bullshit. This
I will accept any horse.
Horses.
But I want my perfect horse.
Can't believe Frank's not perfect. Mm. When Frank did so much,
I need to be able to ride
what about
it.
Appearances.
I can't. Frank will not accept a saddle.
Don't you need someone to carry your tilbury?
I don't have a tilbury.
Well, you're gonna have to build one, aren't you?
A bilberry. Oh, that's a different thing. Okay, what happened here? Okay,
the light of God.
The light of God.
And you're gonna die. God. Oh, it's nice of God to like really let give you that warning.
It is, yeah. So when you see the light.
And when we can see you lit up. I don't know, I'm like, and Nemo, you're going to be the
Shit.
First to go.
Yeah.
When we see that happen, or
damn. Yeah. So every time.
I can't believe my life was just like a flash before my eyes. I'm like, well, what? I'm dying for that. All right. Cool.
Okay, I get Jean Valjean, and then I make the show, and then I die for that.
So, Sister Simplice keeps coming back and asks Fantine how she is, and all that she can say is that she is well, but she can't wait for Monsieur Madeleine to visit her. Like, and it just, like, this chapter is, I would call, the turning of the screw. they keep doing that. And we get this sort of image of Fantine as she was originally, and Fantine as the sort of the shadow of her former self, as we saw most recently, where she's put aside her modesty, her shame, her happiness. That is a direct quote, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. That is not the sort of thing I would usually describe a woman with. But now she is its ghost. Physical deterioration had completed the work of spiritual sickness, and she has become sort of aged and haggard in her appearance. And here it actually mentions she is 25.
Yeah.
So it was very like me just being like, huh, while all that stuff happened, Fantine is like the same age as us.
Yeah.
Which is like...
That's fun.
That's real fun, you know?
Yeah.
Throughout like all the stuff that happened at the beginning.
Yeah. And her kid is like 7.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stop it, the 1800s.
Yep. Stop it fucking now. The doctor returns and this image keeps happening of the doctor returning and you know, has Monsieur Madeleine visited, and he hasn't. He usually comes at 3, and there's this nice quote of and since punctuality is a part of kindness, he was always punctual.
Mm.
I like cute. That. It is cute, isn't it? by half an hour before the time he's meant to have visited, she starts becoming stressed and keeps asking when he is going to arrive. And 3 comes and she like sits up straight and just stares at the door, waiting for him to come, barely blinking, barely breathing. And it sort of seems extraordinary to the nurses that she had the strength to do that when she hasn't. She's been sort of barely moving. But the door doesn't come, and she sits there watching the door for a quarter of an hour, and obviously they turn the screw one notch, and he doesn't come. She crumples back into the bed. Half an hour passes, and every time that the clock strikes, she looks up at the door, and obviously Madeline doesn't come. And it's like, while what she was thinking of, you know, was very clear, like, she doesn't say anything about it. She's just disappointed. she just lies in bed and coughs. It's just like, fucking hell. By the time it gets to five, the sisters hear her say, "But since I shall be going tomorrow, it is very wrong of him not to come today," which is an interesting, and suggests that she expects to die tomorrow.
Mm.
Some sort of foresight. Mm. Who knows? She sings a lullaby, which is so heartbreaking that Sister Simplice, who is a hardened nun, begins to cry. Because of this, Sister Simplice then sends a serving girl to see if the mayor is going to come, and finds out that obviously the mayor has left early in the morning. And while the girl and Sister Simplice are discussing this, Fantine sticks her head out of the curtains and is listening, and hears that they're talking about Monsieur Madeleine, and starts to shout at the nurses, and her voice is described as being so hoarse and rough that it might have been that of a man, and asks when Monsieur Madeleine will be coming. And the sister believes that by telling her that he's left and they don't know where he's going, it might damage her health enough that she will be very, very unwell. And the serving girl says to Sister Simplice to say that he's at a council meeting. But obviously one of the things that we have learnt about Sister Simplice from the last chapter was that she absolutely does not lie. Yeah. So she looks to Fantine and says, "The mayor has gone out of town." So not giving any details about where he has gone, but so it's sort of a loose falsehood, a loose truth. The worst thing happens. Fantine started up with shining eyes and sat back on her heels. There was a look of indescribable happiness on her ravaged face.
Oh,
no. He's gone out of town. He's gone for Cosette. This is why we understand Fantine is in ecstasy. Yes, she's absolutely convinced that he's gone for Cosette, and is sort of possessed by a renewed vigor.
Mm.
Seems to become a lot more well. It goes on a sort of a long speech where she talks rationalizes why. It must be true that he's gone to go and get Cosette. And I think this is where she mentions, I don't know whether she mentions it earlier, that Cosette's real name is Euphrasie. Mm. I don't know whether she said it earlier.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
Okay,
because
she did.
It was a funny thing, a mother from Euphrasie to Cosette.
Oh, yeah, to go from Cosette. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool. Yeah, and basically does the I hope that Monsieur le Maire will be okay. I hope he's worn a warm coat because it's so cold, but it's so good of him to go. And it's awful. It's real sad and upsetting, and I hate it. And I shall see Cosette tomorrow. Oh, my dear sister, I'm not ill anymore. I'm beside myself with happiness. I could dance if you asked me to.
And then Sister is like, "Yeah, go on then, fucking do a tango."
Fucking do it, you coward! The sister bids her to go back to bed. The doctor returns and notices a remarkable change in her, and there's this implication that he says basically that seeing this change that happiness has brought a lot of health back to her, and perhaps we shall save her after all. it's literally just that chapter is, we're just going to make things really sad for you if you know what's going to happen. And that's upsetting for me.
Wow, so it worked then.
Yeah.
I guess good job.
I guess good writing.
Yeah.
But also, fuck you. We move back to where JVJ is. It was nearly 8 when the gig passed through to the Hotel de Poste in Arras. And, you know, sends away his extra horse, and he led the white horse to the stable himself.
Mm. Had the time for that, I guess.
Had the time for that, yeah, exactly. Says that he won't stay the night in the inn, even though his horse is exhausted and will require 2 days' rest. You know, leaves and his horse is looked after, and he begins to walk the town, which he obviously doesn't know, and is looking desperately for where the courthouse is. And asks the first person that he sees.
Just get out Google Maps.
Just get out Google Maps. Yeah. Like,
it'd be
so much easier.
Yeah.
This is we're getting fantastic insight here into what the modern retelling of the name will be.
He's like trying to type it in, but his fingers are so cold from the
chair. Oh, no.
He can't type it in properly, and he's like, and then he drops his phone, and it smashes. The screen cracks, and then he can't, like, look.
Oh, no.
So he has to talk to a human, and then it's like, okay, boomer, and then it's like...
Wow. If you enjoyed that pitch...
Give me $3 million to make
And they
this.
Will stop. God. The person that he asks where the court is says that the court rises at 6. Like, you'll probably be too late. And he's like, no.
Ask you a fucking opinion. I just asked for directions.
Yeah. He walks him to the court. And he's in luck. The lights are on. Someone's home. He goes into the house, and there's a bunch of lawyers around doing lawing things. And he asks the first lawyer that he sees, like, how is the case going? And the lawyer goes, it's over. Over? The tone of his voice caused the lawyer to look at him. Excuse me, monsieur. Are you a relative? No, I know no one here. And there was a conviction? Naturally. Nothing else was possible. And what was the sentence? Hard labour for life. Madeline's next words were spoken in a voice so low they could scarcely be heard. And the question of identity? Identity? But there was no question of identity. The case was perfectly straightforward. The woman had killed her child. Motherfucker.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
Yeah.
They had me at the beginning.
And it turns out the case has just started, the next case, and appears to be a very simple one as well. It shouldn't take too long, but because nothing is ever easy for Jean Valjean, it's very crowded in the room. There's probably no seats. You probably won't be able to get in. And he's like, alas, tries to go into the room. But yeah, again, no seats. He asks the usher, and the usher is really shitty with him. And basically it's like, only important people get to go into the room.
I was going to make a joke about how all these people in this courtroom, like, need to go home and, like, watch Netflix. And I was like, but, like, how many of us go home and watch, like true crime things on Netflix? And, like, I was gonna make a thing of, like, oh, you know, it must have been so wild when, like, the only entertainment you had was, like, watching the Justice of Others. And I was like, oh, like, Making a Murderer. It's just that, but, like, we're not in the room, so we're even further distance away from it. We're not, like, in the room throwing tomatoes, but we're still, like, watching it. God, humans. Yeah.
And it's even more because we're separated from it as well. It's like, it's not even a recording of the case.
No, yeah.
That has been edited. It is someone retelling the case. So it's like three layers of...
So many people thinking that they can then go, like, oh, well, I know what happened.
Mm.
Whereas, like, I guess in a trial, you wouldn't then be like, hey, judge, fuck you, I know what's the right decision. Whereas a lot of people are like, hey, judge, I know what the right decision is when you watch it on Netflix. And it's like, So anyway, that was my...
Turns out,
yeah.
Things are
Exactly the same fucking same.
Yeah. So at least Jean Valjean was like, I guess I'll go look at this person on trial and judge it, instead of when he was still at home, like, well, I'm sure he deserved it.
He's probably
done a crime.
There's a brief mention that the it's going to be a very straightforward case, and that the prosecutor is a very capable person. Is an interesting detail noted that he seldom failed to get his man.
But he's a prosecutor.
Nice.
Was it?
Nice.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for the support. And my career in stand-up comedy down the drain.
I'm still in the middle of this quote. There's more to it. And was, moreover, a person of refinement who wrote poetry.
Oh,
so, you know, there's no hope. People who write poetry and are refined. So the usher is rude to him and is like, you know, you're not going to be able to come in. There are no seats except for the ones behind the president's chair, which were reserved for people who hold public office.
Wow.
The violent inner conflict that had absorbed him since the previous evening was still unresolved. New aspects of the matter constantly occurred to him, and he continues to sort of tear backwards and forwards, and then he tears another thing, and it's a sheet from his pocketbook, and he's written on it, M. Madeleine, Mayor of Montreuil-sur-Mer. He runs up the stairs, gives the piece of paper to the usher, and says, kindly take this to the presiding judge. And then we go on to the next chapter. And it's when he does bullshit like that that you remember that it was a periodical. Mm. So it's like, ooh, gotta leave every chapter at a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Or a really weird allusion to Jesus.
Those are the only two moods.
Those are the two moods. Chapter 8. Sorry, that was me trying to read Roman numerals. Like, there's so many I's after that V. It was three. It's three. Chapter 8 is called Admission by Privilege. And we...
So we know that he's a white guy.
So we know that he's a white guy, and your dissertation is wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I accept this feedback.
Yeah. That's the only kind of privilege that exists, yeah. Is white privilege.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. We begin the chapter with a sort of a... overview of the vague celebrity status that that the mayor of Montreuil-sur-Mer has acquired. Lots of the people in the nearby towns are jealous of how successful M. has been, and he's famous for reviving the jet industry. And like, I read the jet industry and I was like,
jets.
What? And then I was like, oh yes, the jet industry.
So in the adaptation, he is going to have a jet industry, and it is going to be jumbo jets.
He runs EasyJet.
Yeah, and also...
Oh god,
that's terrible. And then he also is Instagram famous, and he's like, but he doesn't run his own account. Somebody in town has a, like, fan account that's, like, really famous.
No, it's, the lady, the foreman.
Yeah, yeah.
She's the one who runs it.
And everyone's like, ooh, it must be his account. It's like a bit, like a hotly debated thing of like whether he actually knows about it and whether like the photos are actually staged. Because he looks so beautiful in every single photo. And they're like, this can't be, it can't be like a fake one, like a...
If you want Nibba to stop. Page them 3 million francs.
page them.
I don't know how money works. God. Also how paging works.
Just send an envelope, an unmarked envelope.
With £3 million.
You said francs. I prefer it to be in francs.
You don't want it to be in francs.
Send a pigeon.
No, francs are still. No, they're not.
No, it's euro.
Swiss francs? No.
Yeah, no, they use euros now as well, I think.
We only want defunct money.
I remember in my lifetime using francs. Maybe that means that...
You're old. Sorry.
No one's ever said that to me. Wow, that's never the burn that I get.
I was going to say, can't wait until we use euros here in Britain. And I was like, oh no.
That's... It's the opposite.
Yeah. We've got literally, the pound forever. I wish. Yeah. A moment of sadness. We are reminded that, well, we're not reminded, but we are told that lots of the people in local communities, lots of the business owners in local communities owe him money because he freely lends out money to local entrepreneurs and things like that. Thusly, the president of the court, the counselor of the king's court at Douai, however the fuck that is said, who is presiding over the court at Arras, gets this piece of paper and is like, shit. Holy shit.
Oh my god, my Insta crush is here.
My Insta crush is here, literally, and tells the usher to get him. And like the usher comes back and is like, oh, please, you know, come in. It's if your honour would be so good as to follow me. And has a new slip of paper that has like the compliments of the president written on it, basically.
I like to think, instead of him giving like a card with his name to prove his identity, he was just like flexes his giant hand. Like, is this proof enough?
Oh my god!
Because there's only one man who could be that small. And laces a bit more of his chest cleaver.
Oh my god!
This giant pet. So that's how it goes in my.
Yeah, if you want Stevie to write the modern adaptation,
like that's a porno version.
I love the three. I love the three distinct flavors of the versions of these books. This modern adaptation, like Nemo's terrible one, Stevie's porno one, and my one that's just close-ups of horses.
And then we mash all, we film them all individually, and then we mash all three of them together. But like with no sense or sensibility, it's just the first 5 minutes of me, and then the next 5 minutes of you. No matter what's on screen at the time, it just mashes together.
Everyone's like, it's so postmodern. Yeah.
It's like Tree of Life, but by Brent Barrackin's Lamest Podcast.
If you pay us, we will stop. All of us. Mr. Madeline, he is not happy that this is happening. He has got what he's wanted and is furious about it. He goes up to the, to a room which is before the judge's room, it is the room of the judge's room, and there is a door with a brass knob that leads directly to the courtroom. The brass knob becomes relevant later.
to my version of the return.
It absolutely does. So we get this he paces back and forth more longer and, you know, is agonizing, still hasn't made a fucking decision as to whether he's actually going to walk in, even though he's given his identity to the people who are in the room, so like it is known that he is there, which I think is an interesting choice. It's the, it makes me think of, and I don't know whether it's actually got any link to, but he is chosen to be named in that place, and it made me think of the, who is it? The biblical boy. You know, the one biblical boy, not Jesus, mm-hmm. The one who... Is
Moses?
I'm going to need a tiny bit more than that.
Hey, I don't know anything.
Pre-Christ?
No. Post-Christ. At the time of Christ, the one Judas. Where the... No. Oh, my God.
Luke. John.
A disciple or not a disciple?
A disciple. The one where they're like, oh, are you with Jesus? And three times he's like, no.
That wasn't that Judas?
Is that Judas?
And then in the end he was like, okay, you got me. That is
okay.
Jesus.
I thought that was Peter.
Maybe.
Because it was like, you're the best boy of Jesus, but you refuse to be associated with him when your life is in danger.
Who announced Jesus 3 times? There it is, denounced. It was Peter. You were right.
Nice.
Now you take the mantle.
No! I know nothing. I don't know what I'd like. It's quite a tenuous link, but like that, like choosing to be like known, choosing to like be associated with that place when what he wanted was to slip in unawares and that sort of thing, like to be named in that place, to be known by those people, is I think is a big choice to have made, and it feels very important. I think it's a tenuous link to Peter, but that was the association that I made.
We love a Bible association here.
Nemo has their thinking face on, so I'm just giving them some time to cook.
I'm trying to think about whether, because we do know what's coming up.
Do we?
So the idea of this being a thing of safety, actually, rather than a thing of, like, risk. Because he's setting up this identity as Mayor Madeline, and he doesn't know what his celebrity is.
Yeah.
But he still is setting up, he's going to the space with the idea of this is my mantle, I am Mayor Madeline.
Yeah.
Which will further him as well from Shamanika. Yeah. Because, like, there's nothing to say that when he walks in, people aren't going to be like, oh my god, you look like the twin of that man. Like, all he knows is that, like, there's a man in there who looks exactly like him.
He did, but to be closer to what you said at the beginning rather than what you were saying further to the back there, there was a passage recently that was explicitly like, Javert and the people who knew me will not recognize me as Madeline.
And West. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Explicitly were like, if I come as Madeline, there is absolutely no risk that they will recognize me. Fair.
So
I think that's interesting.
Because as well, like, his whole thing of, like, getting away from the name Jean Valjean, this is, like, a big stake. Because it's, like, it's that thing of, like, have you ever seen Clark Kent and Superman in the same room? No, I didn't think so. And it's, like, have you ever seen Jean Valjean and Mayor Madeline in the same room?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, that's interesting. It does feel like a naming, but I suppose it is not.
It can be both, I guess. Like, because in this situation, it is both. It is him still not deciding which one he's going to do, and being like, well, to get in the room, I need to
have this name. Person.
Whereas I'm pretty sure he would have loved to have slipped into the back and not been seen at all, and been in the shadow, and been, but he's forced to out himself and have everyone look at him, which is the thing of,
And it's also the thing where it's like, Javert will know that he's been there.
Yeah.
Like, that is something that will be known, and it's like, why does he care? Why has he traveled that distance? So I suppose there is the aspect, it is the risk to an assumed identity, but there is still the safety of the assumed identity.
Yeah,
sometimes it's both. But I think yours is stronger.
Which undermines the sometimes it's both.
Sometimes it's both,
but one is better.
He's pacing backwards and forwards in the judge's room and becomes terribly aware that he's not eaten in 24 hours and has been shaking around on this jig with, like, shitty suspension for this whole time, and is like absolutely numb. It's just like in that space, disassociating as fuck. And hanging on a wall, interestingly, is a framed letter written by Jean-Nicolas Pache, who is mayor of Paris under the Revolution and author of the slogan "Liberty, Equality, and Fraternity or Death." I hadn't heard the full.
No, neither had I.
I have only heard "Liberty, Equality, Fraternité." It's funny how, as things become populist, are slowly softened, and the radicalization of them is slowly softened by the people as they go forward. But that letter is hanging on the wall, and sort of there's this image of Madeline appearing to scan this letter, and it looks like he's sort of like reading it and like internalizing the message of the letter, but he's actually just thinking about Fantine and Cosette, which perhaps is sort of a microcosm of him, like, appearing to think about, like, the people, and is only really thinking about things that are important to him, even though it's sort of a looser connection. His eyes fall on the brass handle of the door room, and he's filled with terror, and actually leaves the room. and starts to run, and has like sweat on his forehead, and like, and he has the like a sort of like the feeling that he has is a moment of rebellion, and thinks who says that I must do this, like why must I make this sacrifice, like why must I make this choice. He stands there for a quarter of an hour while the hearing is still happening, and he doesn't know what is happening in the room, and then walks slowly back into the judge's room. And the first thing that catches his eye is the polished brass door handle, which is shining like a baleful star. He stares at it like a lamb might stare at a beast of prey. Mm. And like the two images there of the door handle as a baleful star and him as a lamb, like for me is very like, because Lucifer is the morning star, right? And Jesus is the Lamb of God.
Mm.
So that was like it's like even though it's not explicit, like choosing to use those images in that seems to be.
Don't forget he's Jesus.
But then perhaps not the idea of the morning star, because the door handle. Okay. First thought that I had there was it would be unlikely that the door handle would be a devilish image, because it is him going to the, like, it is him doing the right thing. But then it is him choosing to live in hell, even if he is the angel in that. So it could still be, but then it could be, like, again, stars have been in the last few passages quite a lot and have been sort of a
angelic thing. Yeah, it's sort of more of a God thing, because, yeah, of all the... And also, I guess, is Jesus ever offered... Is Jesus wouldn't... Sorry, Bible is not good. I don't know very much, but it's not like Jesus is ever tempted by Satan, right?
He was tempted... Well, he didn't succumb to it, but he was tempted... He was in the desert for 40 days and nights while the devil tried to tempt him.
Okay.
He was just sort of, like, deliriously wandering around the desert, like, ah!
So maybe then.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think this is probably more towards God.
Yeah, I think it was the baleful star that made me. But then it is, like, what you must do, even if you don't want to. I do think the lamb is maybe... And also it's sacrificial, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it's... Yeah. So he sort of, like, is, like, haltingly, like, taking a step. And pausing and taking a step and getting closer and closer and closer to this like shining brass door handle.
I actually find it interesting that he chose to go for this kind of biblical imagery rather than like talking about it as if the brass, because it would be very easy to be like the brass was the guillotine or the brass was the butcher's block or the butcher's knife or something like that, which would be my first
association.
Yeah, rather than a star, which you don't look at like a brass doorknob and be like,
it's a
God.
Star.
You would think of metals and you would think of things that would kill it, but the, but choosing to say baleful star is definitely forcing the God thing rather than, again, as well, if you're going for lamb, like prey, animal kind of thing. Like,
but it is a door handle. It is literally choosing to take a path to righteousness. It is literally grasping the door handle and opening the door to God. Like, he is choosing to do the righteous thing in this.
Rather than having it forced upon him.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think, like, does tie in. Suddenly, and without knowing how it happened, he found himself standing at the door. He seized the handle with a convulsive movement and the door opened. He was in the courtroom. And that's where the chapter ends.
I feel like we've been talking less bullshit because there's actually been some good narrative tension building. Instead of
us having to like search for anything to like grasp into.
I'm still I was proud of you guys. Fucking came to it about the dream. You just fucking did it. I know that was in the last episode, but like we get to stuff sometimes.
Yeah, but yeah, because there's been less, unless I've already blanked them out, of Hugo's interjections in the last couple ones of being like, whenever Hugo's like, it would be remiss of me to... You're like, so this is just not fucking, needed.
Gear up, my dude. We are coming to
it. But like in the, for these ones, he was like, oh, and then this happens, and ah, it's feeling this. And me and you were just sat there watching New Grace 3 just like, and then...
And then what?
You're like, oh, maybe he like had a good time writing these ones and didn't need to fucking add bullshit.
We are so close to the two essays of my heart.
Ooh, okay.
No.
Oh. The Convent and Waterloo.
Ooh, okay. So he's like doing some good narrative steam now and then is like, right, now to make up for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There has been like nice attention to the actual narrative, I would say. Like,
yeah,
in the
I do enjoy when the plot happens.
Me too.
It turns out.
I love that. I love reading it. I'm like, oh man, I can like just fucking get through this because like the book is happening.
Like, and then what? I do care about this cliffhanger.
Oh, it always actually genuinely surprises me when you don't know what is happening.
You forget?
Yeah.
Well, because, like, I swear it's in the first fucking, like, 15 minutes. This is all gone already in the play and in the film. So I'm just like, wow, there's so much internal stuff going on. And this horse scene is sure happening. And I know that he's going to be like, I'm Jean Valjean. But it's been a lot more lead up than was implied to me in any of the versions. Well, the Japanese version was perfect. But I mean, in any of the other versions, I've only seen two other versions. And the beginning of the BBC show. But it didn't get this far before I was like, but yeah, so I'd kind of thought it was going to be like a, here I am.
Yeah.
But it's, I've enjoyed the like, no, I'm not. Okay, but maybe... Okay, but maybe not. And the pacing and... So, yeah, I'm excited to see what's going to tip him over to be like, I guess I'm Jean Valjean.
Because he's still not, like, even though he's gone into the room, he's still not been like, and I'll go in and I'll be like, I'm Jean Valjean.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to sit and sweat. So, yeah, I want to see what the final, like, tipping point is now. Yeah. What's the final bit of guilt?
And that was Brandon Barrett's Lamer's podcast, produced by me, Nemo Martin, and Julian Yap. Our audio director is Jade, who you can find at jdwasabi.com. If you have any comments, questions, or quibbles, you can email us at lamerspodcast, lesmispodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at lamerspodcast, or on Tumblr at Bread and Barricades. We would really love if you left us a review on iTunes. Just do it. I don't have anything funny to say. I just really hope that people do it.
If you love true crime.
If you love true crime.
Review us.
Yeah, and just say this is your favourite true crime podcast.
This has been about a true crime.
Has.
Well, okay, it's not a true crime.
It's actually
crime.
Been about
the
a false
fictional
crime.
True crime of Jean Valjean.
Yeah. We just want to confuse every single potential
review. Every single. I wish every single review was about something completely different. Ah, oh, dreamy. Horses, true crime. Ah, oh, love it.
Erotica.
Ah. Oh.
If
someone's gonna cut me just going erotica.
It'll be careful.
If you would like some erotica read to you, please donate to our Ko-fi or our Patreon. Either is fine, either will get you erotica.
You keep saying this, I've never agreed to this.
Is it actually on our Patreon?
And
but
you
it
did.
Will be.
I have vocal confirmation from last episode where you said, yeah, alright,
yeah,
I'm
all right.
Down to clown.
Okay, fine, really. I'm always down to clown.
But also, if you don't want to, you don't have
to. No, it's fine. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
We are thankful that you're listening.
Yeah. Surprised, but thankful.
Find a horse somewhere.
Yeah.
Get on it.
Yeah.
Dress in cosplay bullshit.
Yeah.
find a weed seller and just be like,
potion seller. I'm going into battle. And you just sell me your strongest potions.
And they'll be like, I think you've had enough.